You're listening to Boobies and Newbies, brought to you by the Frolic Podcast Network. Podcast that asks novice romance readers to think outside the dick in a box and brave the unbridled world of erotica. I'm your host, Kelly Reynolds, and by the time this episode airs, my holiday novella, Meet Me in Los Feliz, will be available. As of now, you can find it online from both Amazon and Barnes & Noble, paperback and ebook editions. And if you'd like to see it in an indie bookstore or library near you, be sure to let them know. On top of all that exciting news, the best way to find out about everything that's coming up in the Boobies and Newbies verse is to follow us on our social platforms at Boobies Podcast across all of them. You can always catch up on past episodes of the podcast on our website, boobiesandnewbies.com, or on your favorite podcast app. If you're a fan of the podcast and you've got a few minutes to spare, I would greatly appreciate a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It truly is the gift that keeps on giving. And lastly, if the holiday spirit has really got you going, you might consider supporting Boobies and Newbies on our Patreon page. And just to put it out there, but the 12 Days of Boobsmas, our annual holiday special, is quickly approaching. So naturally, I've got some exclusive holiday treats, no tricks, planned for my patrons, which means it is the perfect time to subscribe. All that being said, let's move on to today's book review. Today, I'm joined by a returning guest of the pod and a podcaster herself. You know her as the host of The Cult of Domesticity, but to me, she's just Courtney. Welcome back, Courtney.
Welcome. Welcome all. Yes.
Come all. Listen to us talk. Here we are.
I should say, I think you put me on your Patreon for the one book that I wish I could unread about dating somebody's dad.
Oh, no. You know, it happens.
Because I...
Not a fan? Not a fan of the fantasy of dating somebody's dad?
I'm fine with that. I just... This book... I wanted more, and I legitimately left you Instagram messages of my rage because it was one of those books that I was like, I mean, I got catfished by Instagram. Kelly knows this too well because I will just text her and be like, I read this book. Why? The number of times it happens, it's too high. I'm just like,
Sometimes it happens before you read the book, like, this came across my page. Should I read it? Because I do remember that happening a few times as well, and it being a book that I had read and recommended. So, you know, sometimes we get you before you get bookfished, I guess.
Yes. I'm not going to lie. I am a fan of pre-reading that little bit Amazon lets you read to see if I want to.
Oh, me too.
Because sometimes it'll ring you in. And this one I didn't do. And it's the one book. And I've read Kissing the Coronavirus. That I, like, Kissing the Coronavirus, funny. This one, I regret. And I don't often regret reading books because I've had to read actual historical, like, monographs.
Right.
And so normally these books are just fun. And I'm like, yes. Yeah. And then this book, I was like, it's only 150 pages. Why does this hurt so bad?
It just wasn't for you. And if we've learned anything from reading romance, we know that there genuinely is something out there for everyone. However, that does not mean that everything out there is for everyone. So you found one that wasn't for you. And for that, I'm deeply sorry. I think instead of bookfished, I'm going to go with bookboozled. I think bookboozled is a word that we're going to have to coin.
I like it. You should just have like a little, like, what is it, Batman sound for it? Book boozled.
I was book boozled.
Yeah, you know, you've seen my Goodreads. I will read anything.
Well, Kissing the Coronavirus. I mean, really, all you have to do is start a sentence with, and I've read Kissing the Coronavirus, but
I mean, not gonna lie, if you need a laugh and you need to feel good about yourself, Read that book.
Yeah, I can't say otherwise because I haven't read it. However, for me, I always feel like a good Chuck Tingle book is like a great way to go because they're just so ridiculous and outrageous that I'm like pounded in the butt by the Titanic. Sure. Like, why not?
Yeah. You know, you look at it and you go, somebody worked hard on this. And they publish mm-hmm. it. So I can have faith in myself that I can get up and go apply to that job and act like a mediocre white man with that confidence.
Right. If Chuck Tingle can publish that much outrageous erotica, the rest of us can do anything.
Honestly, that's how I take job hunting. I'm just like, you know, if someone did this, another one I like to go with, if someone made Velocipaster, I can apply to that job.
When I tell you the only reason I know about that movie is because I saw a guy on TikTok watch all of it and he like clipped it as he was watching. So he would show you clips of the movie and then like you'd hear his reactions. My God, I truly, like, if somebody listening has not heard about Velocipaster, please take the time to just go look it up. Look it up on TikTok. Look it up on YouTube. I guarantee you will find some clips. It is worth it. You will get your laugh of the day. And like you said, a boost of confidence.
There are ninjas, even though it's based mm-hmm. out of China. And they're mostly white dudes.
I mean, they clearly filmed it in like the woods outside of like somebody's house in like New Hampshire. Like that's, but it's supposed to be China. Like it's... I just from watching the clips, that's enough. And you've seen the full thing, so I think you would agree. Don't watch the movie. Just watch. Some movies are not meant to be watched. They are just meant to, like, watch the 10-minute recap video on YouTube. And honestly, I feel the same way about books in that I don't think they're not meant to be read. However, there is not enough time in our days, in our lives, to be able to read everything. And so sometimes you have to go with the podcast episode that's doing a recap of it. Sometimes you have to go with the review and synopsis that you find on Goodreads. You know, sometimes it kind of saves you the time of having to read it, unless it's something that you genuinely very much want to read. But if it's something that you're just like, oh, everybody's talking about this, like, I wish I kind of knew what was going on, you know, a synopsis or a quick YouTube video could do wonders.
Trust me, there are several popular book talk books that I feel that way about. Did I finish them? Oh. Yes. Did I regret it? Yes. But that's just how I am. I have to finish it.
Book talk in general is a really interesting source for book recommendations, specifically romance recommendations, just because that's where I find myself on most often when it comes to book talk. But yeah, it really is interesting because I find that a lot of the times it's either A, the same books being recommended over and over again, yes, or B, it's a book that maybe came out like 4, 5, 6 years ago that already kind of had its first life, but like people are new to romance or they're new to, let's just say, reading in general. And they find it and think it's like this new incredible thing. And so I kind of put a grain of salt into book talk recommendations, unless they're coming from book talkers I follow who I've already kind of gauged what they like to read and what, you know, to them is like a 5-star read, because then I can kind of trust them when I see like how our ideas of like what constitutes a 5-star read line up.
Yes, I am not a good person to judge that because I give 5 stars based on enjoyment. So
that's fine.
And like, I look at it this way. If you see me on Goodreads rating something low, that book hurt me. You don't know how, but that book hurt me.
In one way or another.
I'm also a slut for beautiful covers, so.
That happens. Covers will pull you in a lot of the times, and then you don't necessarily get the story that you thought you were going to get from the cover.
I mean, the book we read for today, beautiful cover. I got it from the library because that's who I am as a person. I also just slowly like to recruit as many libraries as I can so I can get access to all the books.
Yeah, I had a paperback copy of the book that we're talking about today, but I ended up reading a digital copy that I got from the library as well, just because I find it easier to like make notes when I'm preparing for a podcast. So using like the digital note feature on Kindle is always helpful. So, well, before we get into that, I was thinking about it. And like I said, you've been on the podcast before. And before we started recording, we were talking about the previous book that we had read together, which was The Right Escape by Cherish Reed. And
go read it. Go read it.
What an incredible, that was honestly one of my favorite reads of, I want to say, was it last year or the year before? I feel like it might have been the year before.
I think it was 2020, because I'm trying to catch up on the playlist that your podcast is on. And I woke up, I had like, I sometimes turn it on as I'm like getting ready, and I like walked away and I came back and my voice was just on the speaker. I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
We're gonna fast forward through this.
Such a great read. Cherish writes beautiful stories. In fact, we actually covered another one of hers earlier this year that was a polar opposite from The Right Escape, in that it was kind of a spooky ghost story. So that was fun. I definitely hadn't expected that from her, but I think you, of all people, considering some of the content you've done for The Cult of Domesticity, would appreciate that one too.
I will be loyal to an author if you write books I like.
I don't care what genre it is. I liked it before. I'll like it again. Yeah, it is interesting the loyalties that people will have with certain authors. I think it can be a little toxic at times. However, I do think there's something to be said about loving an author and their writing style as opposed to like the genre itself. Because if you love a specific author's writing style, you will follow them across genres. You will read their paranormal romance, and then you'll go and read their YA story or their suspense. I know I've done it with a few authors, so I'm with you.
Because I came from a history background, so it's weird. Like, yeah, I will love your writing style, but also if I find out stuff, I'm like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
In grad school, I was researching an author. I had to, like, a story, and I had to read for a class or probably for research or something, and I found out he was like in the military, the British military in Africa at a certain period when bad things were happening. And I'm just like, oh. And I had to talk to someone about, like, I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, it was the Mau Mau rebellion, so like concentration camps in like the 60s, and then a lot of this stuff has only come out because they found, I'm doing air quotes, you can't see because it's a visual
medium.
We
can hear the air quotes.
They found a bunch of documents that they shipped back.
Yeah.
Like the British, that detailed all of this. There's a couple of really good books, but there's some articles if you want to research, like read up on like them finding it. And it's just like, oh, weird, in this back closet that was blocked by like filing cabinets, they found all this documentation about like the British having concentration camps. I think it was Kenya. But yeah, from Kenya. And you're just like, I'm like, I you know when you can't prove it, but you're also like, I feel icky.
Oh, no, so for sure. So I had to talk to them on it. For sure. I mean, that's, I will say for me, for years, that's kind of the relationship that I had with Woody Allen, in that everybody knew the stories about how Woody Allen had, you know, married his adopted daughter. And it was always icky. It was always just like, oh, God, this is just off. And then the more that you found out, the more you heard from Mia Farrow and the more you heard from Ronan Farrow and just like all the members of the family, the more my idea of who he was, like, was cemented in my mind. And we talk about this a lot. I feel like especially in the wake of J.K. Rowling, in that, can you separate the art from the artist? And in my mind, absolutely not. I don't see how anybody can. Maybe you don't know certain things about them when you sit down to read the book. I understand that. However, like you said, if you do find out certain things about something they've said or done or a specific position they have and how it affects other people, that definitely immediately sours any idea that I might have had of them. And I think it's difficult for people who, like, especially if we're talking about like Harry Potter, you know, who maybe loved it as a kid, who have a tattoo, it, you know, that has something to do with it, who have built this whole collection of, you know, Harry Potter related goods. I think it's okay to also have these like core memories that are tied to certain things. However, you can still have those memories and not move forward supporting that particular artist. And that's kind of what I've done with some authors, as well as with like Woody Allen, Kevin Spacey, you know, a lot of people where I will never go see another movie of Woody Allen's or Kevin Spacey's ever again. I will never donate a cent of money towards them ever again. However, I can still enjoy some of the previous movies that I have enjoyed of theirs that I already own, you know, and the same I think can be said about books without having to go out and say, oh, I'm reading this problematic author's book right now. You should go read it too. Enjoy it in silence. Enjoy it in peace. There is nothing wrong with that. But the minute that you go public with something like that, you have to be prepared for there to be some backlash.
Yeah, and I think Harry Potter is an interesting case because it feels very much like the community has reclaimed it.
Right.
And is it letting her take it? They're like, this is, we're taking it back from J.K. Rowling. Like, yeah, she created this.
From the author herself. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, they're like, she created this, but we're gonna change it.
Yeah.
We're taking it in this completely different direction. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an interesting way to do it where she's not going to get like credit honestly,
right,
for it.
Yeah, it is really interesting. And I think we see this across all different forms of art, you know, all different mediums. But, you know, obviously I'm mostly in the book space. And so I do see this happen on a daily basis, especially on Book Talk and Book Twitter. And I will never believe that cancel culture is real because people will continue to buy whatever they want to, whenever they want to. And that's fine. However, I think there's something to be said for being a conscientious reader, for knowing how to digest and analyze like any of the media that you're consuming and, you know, identifying why certain things make you feel a certain way or why you feel icky because of certain things. And I think there's just some people who aren't prepared to do that, who don't have the tools necessary to do that, or they don't want them. And that's fine. I will say this is a subject that I do want to discuss further, probably in a future TIT Talk, the idea of separating the art from the artist, and especially when it comes to cancel culture in the world of books. But really interesting. I loved hearing your thoughts on this, though, Courtney.
Yeah. You know, you never know where the conversation's coming when I show up. No, I could bring you very deep historical thoughts.
Yes.
And then I'm also like, I read this book on furries. Like, you go between them. It is what it is.
Well, and speaking of furries, but not really, let me go ahead and introduce today's book pick for everybody and tell you a little bit about that. So today we're going to be talking about Forever Wolf by Maria Vale. And this paranormal romance was published in April 2019. It's available on Amazon for $5.03 Kindle edition. It's always weird to me when it's like a matter of pennies in the price. I don't know. But in any case, both Courtney and I, as we mentioned, we did get our copies from the library. So, you know, definitely consider your local retailers and libraries as well. This is also the third book in Maria Vale's Legend of All Wolves series. I know there have been two more books that followed this one, but I'm not sure if she has any more planned in the series. The latest book actually came out this year, so it could be that there's more to come. I just don't know. And in full disclosure, I did want to tell everybody that today's book pick was actually selected by the author herself. We here at Boobies and Newbies have never accepted money in exchange for a review. That being said, a while back, I participated in a Romance for Reproductive Justice fundraiser and auction, and I offered up either a guest spot on the podcast or a book pick. Maria was the winning bidder, and she was kind enough to send me a paperback set of her Legend of All Wolves series. she recommended that we read Forever Wolf specifically for the podcast, which is why we're starting with this book, even though it's the third one in the series. And finally, Maria was also sweet enough to send a second set of paperbacks, which I will be offering as a giveaway prize in the near future. So super special thank you to her. Thank you so much for contributing to the Romance for Reproductive Justice. Let me go ahead and give everybody the brief synopsis, which I will say is actually a rather brief synopsis. So I do appreciate that, Maria Vale. And then we will dive into our discussion. So here we go. Oh, and before I do give the synopsis, I do just want to say there are a lot of names in this book that, because this is like rooted in paranormal and fantasy, I will probably get wrong. I will definitely read them the way that I interpreted them. However, neither of us listened to the audiobook. We're going off as best we can with this one. So keep that in mind. Here we go. Legend says his eyes portend the end of the world, or perhaps the beginning. Born with one blue eye and one green, Eolf? What did you say, Eolf? Courtney?
Eolf?
Eolf? Okay, we'll go with Eolf.
It feels Scandinavian.
Sure. Born with one blue eye and one green, Eolf was abandoned by his pack as an infant and has never understood why or what he is. Varya is fiercely loyal to the Great North Pack, which took her in when she was a teenager. While out on patrol, Varya finds Eolf, I'm still going to get that wrong every time, wounded and starving, and saves his life at great risk to her own. With old and new enemies threatening the Great North, Varya knows as soon as she sees his eyes that she must keep Eolf hidden away from the superstitious wolves who would doom them both. Until the day they must fight to the death for the pack's survival, side by side and heart to heart. Okay, I feel like that's maybe a little too bare bones in terms of the story, but you know what's interesting is I feel like the synopsis set something up that I was expecting to be a much greater conflict in the book, which is the fact that Varya is so dedicated to her pack. And we'll talk about this more as we go on, but she's so dedicated to them that I was thinking, oh no, this is going to turn into some kind of like Romeo and Juliet sort of forbidden love where she's found this other wolf, Eolf. And
I was going to say, we should just call him E.
E. She's found E. Well, you know what's funny is his name means lucky wolf, right? Eolf. And so yeah. I kept thinking of him as just Wolf. Like, his name was Wolf. And I know it's
We
not.
Can just call him Wolf. We can just call him Wolf. It's easier.
Yeah. E-Wolf. Easy Wolf. But so I kept thinking it was going to be sort of a forbidden romance between the two of them. And in some ways it is. But what's interesting is, like, the conflict is never really about her having this relationship with him because her pack never really knows about it. It's never a point of contention. So I guess that's the one thing that I do find a little misleading about the synopsis is just that I kind of went into this book with expectations and even while reading it was thinking, oh, she's going to have to conceal their relationship. And she does. That does happen. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was all leading up to the climax being, oh no, they found him out. Now there's going to be consequences that she's going to have to, you know, decide between him and the pack. Like I said, there's still pieces of that. So on the one hand, I feel like that expectation was delivered. However, it also took this massive turn that I had no idea was coming. And especially at the end, there was like this ending that I, in my 100 years, could never have predicted happening. So I'm not sure if like that's a great thing because I was surprised. And how often does a book, you know, really surprise me these days? Or if I'm just like, what?
Yeah, no, the ending, there are, looking back, there are breadcrumbs about it.
Yes.
But because we didn't read the first two books, we definitely were not prepared.
Mm-mm. Well, and so here's what I've gathered from the first two books. I didn't read them yet. However, I just kind of was picking up pieces as I was reading this one and trying to think, okay, who would these first two books be about? It's got to be about other people within this pack. So I know that we have, I'm going to try to get all the names right. I will say this is a book that is full of names. There are so many different characters in this book. But it makes sense given the context. So I know that Tiberius and Silver, I think, are one of the books. And Tiberius is the one who's like a shifter wolf. Like he's he's not like full wolf like the rest of them. And he was raised by his dad to like, you know, you have to be human. And so, so that, and that plays a part in this book too. And then the other one is the human woman who has mated with the wolf that I think is also like the lawyer.
Yeah, he's a lawyer. Can I just say, highlight of this. So the great, was the Great North Pack?
Yes.
Sorry, I read this last week and I was reading over my notes today. So I'm just like trying to remember everything. They have basically purchased this big portion of land and they use lawyers and every other way to keep it private. So like humans don't come on there and all of this. Which is part of the conflict in the book is that people are trying to come on the land. Vaya had come from, like, I think they said between Alaska and Russia, like one of those islands.
And now they're in, because I was waiting for them to describe, like, where they were. They're in New York. They're in, like, upstate New York, aren't they? Like, right on the border of Canada.
That was my guess. Or, like, even, I think it could even be New York and, like, the border of Canada. But her whole, like, pack got wiped out. Basically, so there was drama about that, and that's how she ended up there. That's why she's so protective. But they, she likes that they do pretty much anything, like it's for the good of the pact. Where her group had, they had started turning on each other, and she's known for being like, what, she has like slash marks across her stomach because I forget.
It was like a punishment. It was there's even like a term for it. So here's the thing: I don't read a ton of fantasy. Or paranormal, for that matter. And I think it's because while I can 100% appreciate the amount of world building that goes into creating something like this, truly, I think it's incredible. I get lost. I just, I feel, it's almost like I punish myself because I get upset that I can't remember all of the names and all of the terms and all of the places and like the different hierarchy within their system. And honestly, I do think Maria Vale did a really good job of laying it out. I'm definitely a greedy reader in that I wanted to know all of these things going into the book, but that's my own issue that I need to deal with. Like, I wanted to know what these things meant, and little did I know there was a glossary at the end of the book, because I do feel like had that been in the beginning of the book, it would have helped me a lot more going into reading it.
No, that's what, okay, this is a little beef I have with, like, I love fantasy. I will read them. Like, it's what I really got into as a kid. And I hate when they put it at the end.
Yeah.
It's like, no, put it in the beginning so I see it. And like, and then I know where to flip to.
Right.
If I have questions.
The same with like the map. Like some books will include like a map, and then some will include like a family tree. So you see like the different like families, like, you know, Game of Thrones, I'm looking at you. And it's just, I mean, there's a reason that I never finished reading even the first book in Game of Thrones. It was because there was just so much and so many people that I just kept getting lost. And I think the one great thing about creating a world that's just as in depth as something like Game of Thrones, but because there's a romance, you're automatically tied to like these two characters. Like no matter what, no matter how much you pick up on about the world around them, at least you can understand, okay, this is going to be a love story between these two people. These are the two people that I really need to pay attention to and follow them. So even if like you're getting lost along the way, there's still something to anchor you. And so I think that's the one thing that kind of separates paranormal and fantasy romance for me from what I would think of as like paranormal fantasy fiction.
Yeah. And I do like, I think what's easier about like normal like shifters or some paranormal romances is often they're incorporated into modern day. So it's like a contemporary, but with like a little extra, a little spice. And so it's easier if you don't like to go full Lord of the Rings, you know, Game of Thrones. You have that connection. So you're like, ah, they're using cell phones. That makes sense. No, for this book, like, it took a bit for me to get into it. Like, I remember I started reading and I was going to text you and be like, am I reading the correct thing? Because it took a while to get to the romance. I'm like, I'm all for a slow burn, but where's the love interest?
Yeah, I agree. I will say it was a slower start for me, too. And I wonder how much of that would have been helped by reading the previous two books. Because I'm sure, considering this all takes place within, like, the same pack, I'm sure there would have been some stuff in the first two books that you would have gotten acclimated with the terms. You would have understood, like, maybe a little bit more about this specific group of people. And what I definitely picked up on, though, right away was that this is a, you know, pack of wolves. They, I guess technically we would think of them as werewolves or shifters. However, they certainly don't, because that's even something that when Wolfie points out to Varya, he's like, yeah, I'm a werewolf. She's like, no, you're not. You're a wolf. Stop it. Like, that is not what that means.
Yeah, because it's like there's forever wolves. So like actual wolves, they're only wolves. And then they count themselves as, I forget the term, but like wolves. But they can shift if they want to, but also at the full moon, they have to shift.
Right.
And then they're shifters. So there's several different layers of it, which I thought was interesting because I've never seen one done like that.
Pack wolves, that's what she calls them. And she even says pack wolves are what humans would call werewolves. Well, and like you said, what's interesting too is, and this comes from the glossary of the terms in the book, when they're talking about pack wolves, pack can turn into wolves at any time and usually prefer to be in wolf form, hence the need for like the privacy that they want in this book. Mm-hmm. But during the Iron Moon, which is what we would call a full moon, they must be wild. These 3 days are both their greatest strengths or greatest weakness, and because it binds them together, their greatest strength. So that was what was interesting, was that, you know, during this like full moon, the Iron Moon, they, you know, turn into wolves and run around. But she very early on, and talk about the breadcrumbing, she very early on explains to Wolfie that, you know, if you're already in this wild state, like before the moon comes, you could turn into a forever wolf, and then you will never become human again. You will never be able to shift. Yeah, they're not human at all, but you would never be able to shift back into human form again, which, spoiler alert, happens in the end. And I will definitely want to talk about that more, but oh God, that threw me for a fucking loop.
It's, I'm not gonna lie, great twist. And I think that's really why she chose this book, is like, it's good because like because Wolfie doesn't know a lot of what's happening, it does provide a lot of the context.
Yeah,
because she has to teach him about this world, because basically, like you said, he has been traveling around, and I feel bad, like he discovered like there's certain triggers to turn into your wolf, and his is like, wasn't it like near his pelvis or something?
Yeah, it's like by his, so like when it happens, like it's happened when he's getting like a blowjob before, like it's just in a very interesting location, which honestly is kind of funny, because we already read a book for Cocktober that was about these elementals, so they're descendants of gods and goddesses of the elements, and both of them would experience their elements when they were aroused. So like if she's a fire elemental and she gets turned on, she literally will like burn her clothing off. And
I read that book.
So there you go. I mean, it's just, it seems to be a common theme that comes across in a lot of these books is, oh, well, they do have a weakness and it happens when they're turned on, or
I think it's like what he has to be touched. He has to be clenching that muscle or something. So she teaches him about it.
Yeah.
But it's so sweet because she gets a little jealous because he got a blowjob from somebody else. And she's just like, yeah. Oh, there's also a weird love triangle, but not love triangle in this.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like because I've definitely seen people get upset when they read romance and they're like, oh, there's cheating, or oh, he's kind of a, you know, hoeing around and like hooking up with other girls like before they get together. And what's interesting is that this particular, you know, society of wolves that they've created, mm-hmm. they know that it's difficult to reproduce. And so they basically have sex with everybody, like all the time. Like just if you, and it's not necessarily for pleasure. It's not for bonding or, you know, creating a relationship. It's very much like, we need to reproduce. So like if you got, you know, somebody saying, let's do it, they do it. And so she, you know, her position, she's called a shielder. And so she's like one step below the alpha, but there's also like, yes, a bunch of alphas. And so like her alpha is like who she regularly has sex with. But it's never like an emotional tie, which I think is kind of, it's almost like, I don't want to say it's like doing sex work, but it's almost like what I would expect to see, like if I did read a romance, and I have read romance with a main character who's a sex worker, because it's their job. It's not that they're there to fall in love with or create this like emotional connection with their clients. It's that this is the job they do, and then they can also go and have a relationship.
Yeah. So the structure is there's like a top alpha who like runs every, like who makes all the decisions. And then it's like separate groups underneath because there's, right, more of them. That's why they are together. It's for protection. So like every, like there's like little communities and they all come together for the big community. Like the shielder seems, I guess it would kind of be like some romance or paranormal ones called,
she's Beta, like the Brienne of Tar from Game of Thrones. Like she is there to protect. She is there to... I mean, I will say it does feel like a little disposable. However, I did think it was cool that like when the alpha isn't around, she basically becomes like the delegated alpha in place of that person.
And it was interesting because like, honestly, it felt like she would have been the alpha. She just doesn't want to be.
Like,
it was,
and she's been asked multiple times, like if she would like challenge an alpha to like take their position. And she's just like, I thought that was actually really interesting because what's cool about this is I wouldn't describe this as like a grumpy sunshine. I wouldn't describe this as like an unlikable heroine, because it's just, if this was like a contemporary romance where they all existed in modern day world and they weren't part wolves or shifters of any kind, I think that would make sense. However, she just very much embraces like the position that she has. And she even says one of the reasons she wouldn't want to be an alpha is because she doesn't feel like she has the emotional strength to do that. She doesn't feel like she has the capacity to like love and care and like have empathy for. She's very much like, I follow the rules because I've seen what happens when you don't follow the rules. My pack ripped itself to shreds. I was punished as like a child and like, you know, got my front like clawed off, and it's, I don't want to see that happen again. And the best way to do that is to leave emotions out of it and to follow the rules and enforce the rules. And so it's interesting, like, because it's definitely not a role that you would expect to see from a woman in general. And so in a lot of ways, she's very much like Brienne of Tar from Game of Thrones. Like, she very much takes on this what we would at least describe as like traditionally masculine role, which I loved. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah. And also the head alpha, which the next book is about, because I read the back of the book had that in there. So I went to it. I went to that because I'm a slut for that as well. I'm like, ooh, give me a little teaser.
And that the women can be alphas too. I love that.
The next book is about her, but it's just like the women had interesting roles. It's not, it's like very much more equal footing. It's like, are you strong enough? Do you have the capabilities? And the head alpha is an alpha because her husband, her mate died. which I think happened in the book before.
And now she's got all these puppy children, like, running around, because that's the other thing is, like, when they're little, they're just puppies. Like, they're not human form, at least. And that was actually really, I thought that was both cute and sad when Wolfie is talking about, like, how he's been a wanderer his entire life. And at one point, he was basically, like, taken in and adopted by a family, a human family, as, like, their pet. Like, he was taken in to be, like, their pet dog. And he shifted into a human for the first time.
As, like, a teenager.
Yeah, as a teenager, while he's, like, sleeping at the foot of the bed of, like, these little girls. And so he's, you know, chased out of the house and shot at by the dad and everything. So it really is interesting to see kind of the different ways that these societies exist, because you have somebody like him who never had that community of the pack wolves. And so he hasn't been taught anything about what he is, how he can control it. And then you have Varya, who comes from a very destructive pack that basically tore itself to shreds. And then she was left wandering and made it to this now North Pack, and they have a very organized society and the way that they do things. But then even then you still have people challenging it, because this book is in a lot of ways very political and very reflective of some of the things happening in America today. I definitely did not see that aspect coming. Like, I could see the idea of, like, oh, somebody wants to challenge to be, like, the leader of the pack. However, I definitely did not expect that it was going to be somebody within their pack wanting to basically give the children and the women to the guy that was in charge of, like, the shifters. In order to, like, procreate. Like, we will exchange the women and children for protection, and you can then use them to raise up more people because they need more shifters. And I was just like, oh, yikes, this is hitting a little too close to home when it comes to women and reproductive rights.
Yeah, it's so the shifters basically can't, they really aren't reproducing because they've been forcibly, which I think is addressed in the book before this or not, or the one before, but they don't shift at all. And All of a sudden they can't reproduce. So the one guy's dad, who's in charge of the shifters, essentially works with their legal educator, like their educator, to kidnap his grandkids.
Snatched.
And I hadn't read the one before about this, and I was just sitting there, like, learning about the torture that they put them through. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, that they basically want to torture these, like, little puppies until they turn into human, in human form, and then keep them that way and, like, not let them shift back into their wolf form. In fact, I highlighted a passage where they were basically proposing this idea, like, oh, well, this is what we will do, and it'll be mutually beneficial for both of us. And this one said, the future that we are promising is in our females' bodies. There are many things they want. No, there aren't. There is only one thing. Tiberius was the last shifter birth. They want us to help them breed, whether we like it or not. Silver makes way for Henry so he can continue distributing the light and dark river stones to the 14th table. And the river stones are how they cast their votes, just so everybody knows. I believe at the end, Lucian said that August would prefer that this be a mutually acceptable agreement. To me, that does not sound like I have the right to say no. And that's what's really interesting, too, is it becomes this question of, they even compare it to, what's that word that they have in the human world where somebody forces somebody to have sex that they don't want to? Well, that's called rape.
Rape.
And it's just, it's really interesting that, like, you kind of see the effects that, like, the human world, although they call them West Enders, that the humans are having on this society of pack wolves, even when they're not there. But really everything that's, like, breaking them apart, yes, it's kind of coming from within. However, it's all from West End or human influence. So that's, we hear that from Varya as well, that a lot of the reason why her pack kind of turned on themselves was because of things that were coming from the outside in. And so, oh gosh, just another example of humans fucking everything up for everybody else.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's wild. But the good thing is the pack, that's where they use like their lawyers, they use anything they can, the cops, like, to keep it private.
It was really interesting. Like, I have to say, I'm with you in that it took me a while to get into it, but like the more that I learned about them, and I think especially when the romance started to develop between Varya and Wolfie, I became a lot more invested, and I would also start noticing things that I was like, this is interesting. I never would have expected something like this. Like, did you pick up on the things that they eat in this community? Because it's a lot of like freeze-dried tofu. And yeah, like, I even highlighted a few of them because I was like, wait a second. He opens the containers of freeze-dried egg yolks, chia seeds, and dehydrated tofu skins. And yeah, I was just like, huh. Definitely not what I expected to read coming from what I would assume were like carnivorous wolves.
Oh, yeah. It was like they only like to eat meat when they're wolves.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we would see them go hunting. We would see them hunt. And then there was that unfortunate time where like they made a girl eat a moose because like she only ate part of it, but not the rest of it. So they're like, you have to go finish.
It's because they don't want to waste. It's basically like waste not, want not. If you're going to kill something, you better eat it all.
Yeah, I think that's what surprised me most about the book, and what I liked most about the book was I am always really drawn to, I mean, obviously I'm drawn to originality. Mm-hmm. Like, who isn't? But I think that when we think about like werewolves and vampires and witches, there's so much lore that surrounds them already that you already kind of have certain ideas about what to expect when you read a story with them. So anytime that you can create these different elements of this, you know, society, this atmosphere that make it unique, I find that really interesting. And I feel like there were so many details about this one specific pack. Like, you know, I mean, they have a voting system where they use stones, like light and dark, to vote yes or no. They have, you know, like we said, there's a different hierarchy. Women can be alphas. It's not a matter of like what gender you are dictating what role you have. We have, you know, they do welcome in the fact that one of them has mated with a human. It's definitely like a little iffy for some people. However, that's who he's chosen. The lawyer, Elijah the wolf. And then you have, you know, they eat a lot of vegetarian, vegan meals. And then when they hunt, you have to eat all of it because you're not going to waste any. And it's just, oh, they hate wearing clothing. They hate wearing shoes. Like, shoes especially,
yeah,
are very limiting. Like, it just was really interesting, all the different details that were added, because it wasn't, I hadn't read any of those in the previous books that I have read that have wolves or shifters.
No, this was definitely, like, I've definitely read where they've had, like, communities, but just this is, I feel like, just taken a different aspect and made it like a different type of lore. And I really appreciate it. It's like a good way. I'm not going to say there's a lot of romance in this. It's a slow burn and there's a lot of other things going on.
Yeah. So. And so as we get into this, I feel like this ties into the ending as well, which we need to talk about.
Oh,
and
yeah.
In that, when we think of romance, I think the one thing that everybody can agree on when it comes to romance is that it needs to have an HEA. It needs to have a happily ever after, or at least a happily for now. And this is a really interesting ending in terms of, I think you will question whether or not this is indeed a happy ending. And I'm going to ask you what you thought of it. Like, was this a happily ever after for you?
I think it is, in a way, though, because Varya got to do what Varya loved, which was protecting her pack. Because what you don't know is, what we haven't talked about is, when they shift, they are very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Like, they are blind for a while. So essentially, there's an attack going to happen at the Iron Moon. And Vaya makes the decision to shift before it's safe to do so. And I think because she ends up with Wolfie and they get to live out how they are together. Especially the end when the pack is talking about them. It's really kind of heartbreaking because you could see how much she was loved but didn't realize it.
Yeah.
So it's a happily ever after, yes, but it's also bittersweet.
Yeah, that's how it was. I actually had to read it like a couple times because I was like, wait a second. That did not just happen. Like, she did not just turn into a wolf. Like, stop it. And it was because I just was like, yes, I know that we had talked about what forever wolves were early in the book. She had explained them. Hell, the title of the book is Forever Wolf. So here I am thinking that just means she's going to find her wolf that she'll be with forever.
Forever.
And, yeah. And so I didn't put too much stock into that. But then when she does make the choice to shift into, you know, with her wildest form, and we've been told that if that is the form you take going into the full moon, you will turn into a forever wolf. The part that was hard for me to process as like the happily ever after was that when she does kind of make this transition into being the forever wolf, she starts to like forget things. It's kind of like you sort of forget like your human form existence. So it's like you see her go from like, okay, I've shifted into a wolf, like I'm gonna go find Wolfie, you know, I'm gonna protect the pack and everything, to her not knowing his name, to her not knowing her own name, to it just being like, oh, I have this feeling that I need to find this other being. And they do find each other and they do run off together as their wolves, and they will, in our minds, live forever together happily as wolf and wolf. And that is lovely. That is, you know, I do think that that is a happy ending unto itself. But there's something really sad to me about that the sacrifice to get there is to basically let go of the entire identity that you had before then. So yeah. I was torn when it came to the ending, because like part of me, I just was like, I was genuinely emotional. I was like, this really is hitting me in a way that like I don't know if I'm comfortable with. And I can see where people would see this as the happy ending, and I can see where people would be very pissed off. So I feel like I'm kind of in between.
I think that's what makes it honestly a great ending. Because it's, one, not what you expect.
Oh, for sure.
Two, there's still that aspect of happily ever after.
Yes.
But what got me is, like, they get through the whole fight. And then the next chapter, I just remember it hit me like a ton of bricks when she starts having Vaya describe all this stuff and not knowing what was going on and all of mm-hmm. that, where, like, somebody, I think, carries her to him or something like that because of injuries or whatever, or mm-hmm. puts them together. Why I think it's weirdly, it's like bittersweet because like they don't know everything, but you know that they remember each other. And weirdly, it's going to be really depressing. I'm sorry. It reminds me of the day my grandmother died, because my grandparents both had dementia and my grandfather didn't really know what was going on. But when she passed, he lost his partner of like 60 years. And that man knew he lost the love of his life. He knew who she was in that instant. Mm. And so for me, it's just like looking at that and being like, they always know their person. Like, he wouldn't yeah. know what was going on, but he knew that she was important to him. And it's kind of like, it makes me think of that. And the fact that the pack afterwards, anytime they howl, the head alpha decrees that there has to be a response. When the forever wolves howl, you have to respond. So they're never alone. And I'm just like, you're sad because they don't remember, but their pack is honoring like their sacrifice and letting them be together and be happy.
Yeah, it's the whole idea of like, you're happy because it happened sort of mm-hmm. thing. And so she does talk about how there's like this connection with your wolf that it's like in your soul, like when she's trying to help him figure out like what it is on his body that like triggers him to turn into his wolf form. And she talks a lot about like this soul connection that you have to yourself, to your wolf. Mm-hmm. And it really is kind of like the ending that you're left with, that it's like, it's, they're not necessarily Varya and Wolfie anymore, but they are these wolves that have this like soul connection that are brought together. So yeah, I guess it's just, it's hard for me personally to grasp, just because that's not necessarily something that like I subscribe to. However, it's beautiful. It's kind of tragically beautiful in a way. Like it's like The Notebook, like where you're just like, oh, they're in love and they have this epic story. But like in the end, you know, like, oh, you know, but, you know, the other thing, though, is like if you're in that wolf form and like you don't have memories of what that past mm-hmm. was, you're not necessarily missing something either. Like you have the here and the now with the partner, the wolf that you're with, and not necessarily like I'm mourning who I used to be or who he used to be. Like we have each other. We have each other as we are right now. So it's definitely interesting. And the romance is, I'm with you, it's definitely not a driving force, like, especially because it comes in a little later than I might have expected. And then on top of that, there are times where, you know, like when she gets kidnapped, where we haven't seen her with him for a very long time. Like it's been multiple chapters where we haven't heard anything about him. And that's probably also because, I should mention this, it's told from a single POV. It is 100% Varya's perspective. That's something that I think a lot of people do enjoy. There are also people who prefer not to read a single POV. So, you know, just something to know when you head into reading it, that you will only get Varya's side of the story.
I should say also, it's a very specific way she writes Varya's POV. It was different than what I expected. That's why I was like, when I started reading this, I was like, it's just very straightforward, very austere. Mm-hmm. It is not.
But that's her.
And that's the thing. It's like, I can appreciate it because I, like I said, I read the end bit. So I was like, oh, okay. I liked it because it shows the range of her writing, knowing that she chose to write this book like this. There's definitely a lot of this book without Wolfie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, for most of the book, I think he's just chilling around a cave. So,
yeah, that's the other thing. It's just, it's the one thing that kind of bothered me in a way, was that their romance was never really it's a problem in that, like, she's supposed to be with the pack. She's supposed to mate this alpha dude and be his mate. And she goes to Wolfie and is like, look, we can't do this because, like, I have to go fulfill this duty that I have to the pack. And he even is like, okay, like that sucks, but like also fine. And then he, you know, comes and rescues her, which I'm like, fantastic. I love that he like shows up and everything to help save the day. However, it's just like, there's never any, nobody even finds out. She doesn't even have like a person who's like her confidant that like she tells like, oh, I've been fucking this white wolf in a cave like over there. Like, I'm like, I wanted there to be some kind of conflict with their romance and like his him coming from like, you know, a different place than her, because she emphasizes how they are very protective and they don't take well to outsiders. I don't know. That just kind of, but maybe would that have been too predictable? I don't know. Like, I feel like that was kind of what I expected was for that. So I don't know.
And also, like, their romance, like, you can see he was falling early on because he said he liked the way, like, he had a tuft of her fur. Mm-hmm. And she was like, you can't rub it on you because you're going to smell like me. And then she does do things to protect him, to show that she cares. Like,
right.
There's a lot of people coming over the border. They have wolves out patrolling certain areas. And she chose the area that he was in, much to her alpha's sadness, because he wants her close. And honestly, I'm like, dude, y'all ain't even good together, to be honest.
He doesn't do much, the alpha. Like, he doesn't really do much. Like, I'm just, that's why I think, I will say, having read this one, I am intrigued by some of the other couple pairings. Like, even though this is not my usual kind of read, I was so intrigued by this pack and just kind of wanting to know more about some of the other pairings, specifically the lawyer Elijah and the human. And then also in the next book, Alpha Ellie. And I think she pairs with, is it Constantine?
Constantine, who's a shifter.
Yeah. And I think that'll be interesting because he was kind of like working, not, I don't want to say he was working with, but like he was led by like the super bad dude that wanted to like kidnap women and children. And so, and he helped get Varya out of there. And so I'm kind of interested to see like, well, moving forward, how do the shifters, like, do they integrate into the Pack Wolf Society? Like, do they form some kind of like alliance? Like, what's the deal there? So I'm definitely interested in reading more.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think this is a good book to start with because it's very good with the world building, because I think because she has to explain a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't quite say this is a romance, honestly.
I'm with you. I am a little torn on if I would I would totally believe that I would pick this up next to, like, when I used to buy the Sookie Stackhouse series, the book series that inspired True Blood. When I used to pick up those paperbacks at my local Borders, RIP, they were never in the romance section. They were always in, like, the sci-fi paranormal fantasy section. And I think I would probably buy this a lot more as being in that section than I would necessarily it being in the romance section. However, it does follow the structure of a lot of romance series where you have different couples in each book and a shared universe of characters. So yeah, I'm torn. I am torn. And so that's kind of why I also want to read another one of the books, is to see, well, how prevalent is the romance in one of the other stories in this series? Like, maybe it was this couple, this pairing in particular, that because she was so stoic and protective and, like, you know, drawn to the pack, that maybe that's why we didn't see as much romance. But I don't know. So I will say, you do get a little bit of sex in this. You do get, like, a little bit. Did you have a specific sexcerpt that you wanted to share?
I mean, I found the one after she was explaining to Wolfie that Lorcan, her alpha, like, really doesn't look at her because she has the scratches across him. And he comes to her. He goes, "One hand slides around my waist. I don't know what his problem is, but I see you, Varya. His eyes focus on my chest. I feel you, Varya. His hands trace every naked inch of the path carved by Ilarion's claws all those years ago. I want you." He exhales, "Valaria." And then that's, I think, the main sex scene. There is, I believe she does give him a blowjob later, but, like,
yeah,
there is, like, their relationship. I mean, it's not a bad sex scene. Like, I highlighted it as well, but it's just, like, you kind of really don't get a lot.
It's very much like you kind of get started, and then, I don't want to say it fades to black, but it's kind of like, it's more of like, we get started, we know what everybody's doing, and then we just kind of, like, it happens and it's done. Like, it's more of sort of like, I think there's a lot more focus on the emotional connection of the sex scenes than there is on the descriptions of the sex scenes themselves. Because I highlighted the exact same place you did and, like, went an extra paragraph. So after he says, "I want you, Varya," then he bends down, pushing his hair to the side, and takes my torn nipple into his mouth. My hand slides against the back of his head. At first, I mean to pull him away, but as he explores with the top of his tongue and the even softer, silkier swirl of the underside, I push him closer instead. This has nothing to do with the quick and dutiful fucks that fulfill my responsibility to the pack. Unfamiliar heat tears through my veins, making my body warm and liquid, fitted to his, one damaged, awkwardly healed wolf to another. And I mean, I love that scene, because it's not really about the sex itself. It's like the fact that they're actually having sex with her facing him. You know, when she has sex with the alpha, it's very much like he fucks her up against a tree and he doesn't want to look at the fact that she's, like, clawed and scarred on her chest. And Wolfie embraces every bit of her. He loves her. Like, he's like, "This is a part of you. I'm not trying to hide this." And so that's the part of it to me that's like super sexy, is the part that's like, we both have our damage. However, we love each other and embrace each other, you know, and what this damage has made of each of us. So yeah, no, you're right. It's not, it's definitely not the most explicit, although they do have a great like exchange early on where they talk about the word fucks, because he says something like, oh, this fucking place or whatever. And she's like, that's not how you use that word. You say like, he fucks, she fucks, we fuck, they fuck, but it's not this fucking place. And it's just this whole exchange about like how they use that word. So even like the etymology of like the word fuck is like different in this world. So yeah, really interesting.
Yeah. And it, I think this is much more of an emotional romance, like where it is really, I think because they are both closed off, it is, instead of sex, it's them opening up emotionally, which is a different kind of, you know, romance. It's not what I was expecting, because I know what kind of books you suggest.
And so I like emotional connections too. I just usually like them with a side of smut.
I mean, that's fine. This is why we bond. Because I will literally text you and be like, girl, I found the filthiest shit.
Gimme, gimme.
Maybe we needed this. We just needed something that was more emotional.
I mean, it's weird to say, but I feel like usually every year, there's usually like one or two romances I read where they like rip my heart out. And that doesn't usually I always joke about like how I'm dead inside, because I'm like, look, I love to read romance, but I don't read romance to like feel things. I read romance to like, you know, love this couple and be like, oh my God, that's so cute. And then also like, hey, look at that. Yeah. But like, I don't usually read them to cry. I don't. And I know a lot of people do. I know a lot of people love the more angsty emotional side of romance. That is not me personally. However, there is usually one or two books a year, though, that will do that to me. And I didn't cry while reading this one, but I got to tell you, I was close with that ending. And last year, it was The Charm Offensive and Real. Those were the two that really got me. I think the year before, it was Emma Scott's series about the Lost Boys series. Like, there's always like one or two a year that I'm not prepared for. And then they hit me a certain way and I have to process my own feelings, which, ew, I hate that. But yeah, I really did enjoy this one.
I did. It was not what I expected.
Same.
But those are often the best books.
Right. What I love about romance is what is often criticized and critiqued about romance, and that is like a certain level of predictability and structure. I like that. I like knowing that by the end of the book, I'm going to have a happily ever after. I like that along the way, things can change. However, there's usually still a general trajectory for what to expect. And then with this one, I just kind of gave up on trying to predict things, because we just kept taking turns that I wasn't necessarily prepared for. So it was unsettling in a way, but also a good surprise.
It's definitely a book to lose yourself in, with the world building and the lack of like that predictability, you know. It's got that good homey feel without it being too much.
It does feel homey, especially because you have this community living in the woods. It's like upstate New York / Canada. You know, I mean, it's got fall vibes, even though I don't even think they mention it being fall. But it definitely has like fall vibes, cozy vibes to it. And honestly, on that note, I think it's time we give this book a few grades. Yes. And I know it's been a while since you were here last, Courtney, but we rate on this podcast heart, humor, and heat on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the very best that it could possibly be for you, of course. And if we decide that something's not applicable, we can also go with an NA rating. So let's start with heart. What do we think out of 10?
I would give it an 8 or a 9. It had a lot of heart.
Ooh, okay.
I thought this one, yeah, it lacked in other areas, but it definitely, like, her heart towards her pact and then her heart towards Wolfie, and they're like, you could see all that towards each other.
Yeah, I'm a little bit torn because I'm with you. I think there's a lot of heart in different ways that we wouldn't necessarily expect. Like, I do wish there had been like a little more romance. However, the heart that and the dedication that she has to her pack and to protecting, like, especially like the cubs, like when she's kidnapped and like having to try to protect these little puppies, like, oh, so heart-wrenching. So I think I'll give it an 8. Yes. I think I'm with you. I will give it an 8 when it comes to that. Humor, there were definitely, you know, there were a couple exchanges. Like I said, the one with the with them talking about fucking, that might have been it. I feel like, honestly, I'm going to go NA on this one just because, like, I don't think it's meant to be funny. I don't think there were really many humorous moments in general.
No, there's not really.
Okay, NA.
Yeah. I don't know what we could do in a
NA for nah. Yeah. We'll move on. So, and then it comes to Heat, and this will be, I think, an interesting one. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
I think the one explicit sex scene we got was good, but again, it was a thick book. It was a big book. I'm not going to lie. And I know how you rate yours. You talk about Katie Roberts being like your gold standard.
Yeah.
And let's not lie. That's fair, man. That
Katie,
woman.
Katie Woo! Robert and Nikki Sloan. They're always like my 10 tier.
I don't think I've read a Nikki Sloan recently, so I'd have to think about that. But I'm working my way through the villain series for Katie Roberts. Yes, so
absolutely. So, yeah.
Even though it was a good scene, I'm going to give it like a 3 or a 4.
Okay. Now, for me personally and for what I've done here on the podcast, if there is an open door sex scene, for me, it's automatically at least a 5. Like, that's just my general scale. So because we have sort of an open door sex scene, it's definitely not closed. It's like door open, but like maybe it's blurry. I don't know.
It's like a cracked door.
Yeah, it's cracked. Like you can peek inside, but maybe you're not seeing all the parts. And then the same with the blowjob scene. It's like you know what she's doing, but like, do we get like a description of it? Not really. So I think I will keep it out of 5. I'll keep it out of 5 in that it is open door. It is there. However, it's not the most, like, I think if you were just kind of like flipping through the book or doing the typical keyword search in your Kindle, that's like cock, dick, pussy, clit, like you wouldn't even necessarily maybe get those terms come up in the book. So it would be confusing. You would wonder, well, is there any? It's there.
It's not bad. It's there. That's why I think I'll up it to 4. I'll keep it at 4 because it is there. It's not bad.
No.
I just, like, you literally have her getting fucked up against a tree really early on into this.
Oh, it's like chapter 1 or 2. Yeah. Like by the alpha. Mm-hmm.
That's why I was confused because I was just like, is he the guy I'm supposed to like? Because I don't. I don't get this. Because there is other sex. It's just like, I would have liked more of their connection.
Yeah. In fact, you know who was having really good sex was Elijah the lawyer and his human mate. Because they kept, I swear to God, every time they needed his lawyerly skills, they'd like go banging on his door and he would be having sex. They were always having sex because he'd be like, I'm busy. Don't come in. Like, it was more than once. It was at least twice, if not 3 times, that he and his mate were interrupted having sex. So I, like I said, want to read that book because I'm just like expecting banging round the clock.
Yeah. Oh my God. The best one is when she comes back. I forget where she, I think she'd been patrolling and she comes back and they had just been banging in like his hut or whatever. And they go in and she's like, oh, it just smells like sex in here.
Yeah. And she like, I think she's even still in wolf form because she says that she like boops his nose like with her nose. And I'm just like, wait, I'm sorry. This man is still in bed, tangled up with his partner. And you're going up there and like booping his nose like while he's still inside her. Like,
or had just been inside her. Like he's just rolled over and just like, what the fuck?
Exactly. Exactly. So like I said, that is the book I will be reading next is Elijah's book.
We'll review notes.
Yes. And then we can move on to the next one with Alpha Ellie, because I like her. She gets shit done.
She does.
And I'm excited for that too. And I'm especially excited to see what like the dynamic is between like an alpha woman and her male partner. Like I'm curious because I don't think I've actually ever read that in a romance. And so I am curious to see like how that plays out.
Yeah. I will say from the smidge I've read that was at the back of this book, because I reached a point and it was like, you're only 80% through this book. And I'm like, but it's done.
Right. There's like 7 chapters of that book, like at the end of this one.
Oh yeah. It is like a present I didn't know I wanted. It like you learn so much about him. He's like a protector of like his adopted brother. It's like a little found family.
Yes, love.
Honestly, I think based off of the first 7 chapters of the book that's in this book, that's not this book. I don't know how to properly describe it, but the preview of the next book. I think because there's a shifter couple in there. And she's kind of like a princess. And he's kind of a giant bag of dicks. I think they're going to break up. And I think she is going to go after the lower class wolf who got his stomach scratched at the end of this one. I think they're going to end up together. Because she was very... Because she was very into him and very concerned about him.
I like Arthur.
Yes.
I think, was it Arthur?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. No, maybe that's book 5. I don't know. So either way, clearly we're invested.
Yeah.
And we want more. We were both pleasantly surprised by this book. We definitely have questions and interests as far as like the other characters and the other stories go. So job well done, Maria Vale. Honestly, I think this is one of those things where I don't mean this in an insulting way in any fashion, is that I don't think this is a book that I would have necessarily picked up on my own. I don't think this is something that I would have gravitated towards because, like I said at the beginning, I don't typically read paranormal or fantasy unless it's like urban fantasy, urban paranormal. Like it takes place in Chicago, but they just happen to be witches. I'm like, okay, great. So this is not something that I would have normally selected. So the fact that, you know, thank you for bidding on an opportunity for me to cover one of your books on Boobies and Newbies, I'm really thankful that this was the book and the series that I was given for, you know, this fundraiser. And because I'm really glad that I read this. This isn't something that I normally would have read. And I am now interested in reading the rest. And I hope after listening, a lot of people are too. And like I said, I've got a set of paperbacks for a giveaway that I might end up saving until 2023, just because the holiday season is coming up quick and we already do so much with the 12 Days of Boobsmas. But yeah, I'd be happy to share those paperbacks with a future reader. So
I really just appreciate the way it was written. It was a very different perspective than what I was expecting. This is written in such a way that it makes you think more and it engages you in a different way with the writing style and the world building that I just haven't had in a minute. And I really, really enjoyed it.
Yay. I'm glad. Well, it seemed like this worked out well for all of us. So job well done on all fronts. And as always, Courtney, thank you so much for being here. You are always welcome back on Boobies and Newbies. And until then, you know, I'm just an Instagram message away with your latest book boozled discovery.
And if you're on Patreon, maybe she'll share them if I have enough rage.
But anyway, thank you so much for hanging out with me again. And thanks to everybody for listening.
Have a boobtastic day.
Ooh, always. Thanks so much for listening. Boobies and Newbies is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts. You can follow Boobies and Newbies on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram @BoobiesPodcast.